This is exclusive access into the heart of racing. The Racing Pulse Inner Sanctum.
It's great to see you back in Melbourne and here back in the RSN 97 studios. One of the star New Zealand trainers, Roger James, who's looking to take home some Australian dollars today. How are you, Roger?
Good, thanks, Michael.
Good to see you back in Melbourne. How many Melbourne carnivals would you have done?
I don't know that, actually, but I remember being in the studio 22 years ago when I had Zonda over here.
Is it that long ago?
Yeah, it is, and I was campaigning horses over here prior to that, certainly.
Mm. Is Zonda the best you've had?
Yeah, without a doubt.
Mm. But we never probably got to see him reach his peak.
Nobody ever got to see the best of him. He only had about 13 career starts, but he was freakish.
What was the first horse you brought over here then, do you remember?
A horse called Pumpernickel, I think. Mm. He was below top class, but a handy horse. He never won here, but he did pick up some Aussie dollars and he paid for his trip.
You're now training in partnership, which is what we're seeing a lot more in racing, both here and in New Zealand. And yourself and your training partner, Robert Wellwood, this is your second season. For you, is this a way of prolonging your training career? Because a lot of trainers find it so arduous, 24/7.
Yeah, at this stage of my career, I'd have to say yes. I have had four previous junior partners, and they've all gone on and trained successfully. Three have trained at Group 1 level. And I've found it a good way to retain your top staff by giving them a bit of recognition and giving them a bit of a kickstart into their own training careers. But this one's a little bit different. Robert's from a largely an equestrian background, as I was myself. He's got a degree in business and finance, and but he's passionate about racing, and that's all he wants to do. And we've talked at length about it prior to him even coming and working for me, and I see it very much as you know, he being the successor, hopefully.
Mm. How many horses have you got in work together at the moment?
Look, I have never trained a big team. 40 has been my limit from day one, and I've never had more than 40, which enables me to you know, campaign them and be away a little bit if I get one good enough, which I really enjoy. That's what I aim to do. If I get a horse good enough, I just pull out the Australian calendars and say, where can we place this horse at best?
So keeping that that smaller stable where you can have the hands-on approach and a hands-on touch throughout your career, what do you think when you look at a fellow Kiwi like Chris Waller and the operation he runs?
Oh, look, just nothing but admiration for what he does. You know, worldwide, I think the industry has similar problems, whether it be staff or whatever. But to be able to do it on that scale, and, you know, I was talking to James Cummings in the box at Flemington the other morning and congratulated him on the job that he's doing, and I remember spending many a time and morning in the box with Bart, and we reminisced a bit. But to be able to do it on that level, it's a big feather in their cap. As I say, I've never had the aspirations to do that. You know, there's a lot of horses in work in Cambridge now, and I'm very much one of the smaller trainers. There's over 1,000 horses in work there, but look, it works for me, and you know, I was probably never cut out to train the big numbers.
Did you see that as the future for a young Chris Waller when he was coming up through the ranks over in New Zealand?
See what as the...
That he would end up where he is today?
Look, I didn't know Chris well in New Zealand. The first time I met him was on a Sunday morning, and it was in the middle of Randwick, and this young fellow was yelled out to me, "Mr. James, could you come and have a look at this horse for me?" And he thought it was maybe not sound, or you know, hadn't pulled up that well from its previous day, and I asked him who he was, and he said what his name was, and I said, "Who do you work for?" And he said, "Paddy Busselton." And you know, I don't think I saw the guy again before I saw him in Australia, funnily enough.
It's been an amazing, I suppose, story of him rising to the top so quickly. How do you see, when you come over from New Zealand with the state of affairs in New Zealand, the prize money that is on offer, in Australia this weekend, the $14 million Everest, the $5 million Stella Artois Caulfield Cup, and the support races as well.
I'm just in awe of it. You know, I always have been, but over the last 5 years, it's fair to say it's just gone skyward, and there seems no stopping. I can't think of a racing jurisdiction in the world that can be as buoyant as what the Australian one is just at present.
Have you ever thought about relocating over here or opening a stable because of that? The prize money is just so good.
Michael, one of my biggest regrets in life, and I'm a person that looks forward and not back, is that I had stables at Flemington some probably 18 years ago. For 2 or 3 years, but I was pretty hands-on, and I remember one season I had 26 trips across the Tasman. The stable went okay here. We won Matriarch Stakes, and we won some good races, but it was a case of owners at either end not being 100% happy. You couldn't. I found it difficult to keep both ends totally satisfied, and I made the wrong move. But anyway, I closed here and went back home to what I knew and what was secure. But as I say, I'm a person that looks forward, not back.
How tough is it in New Zealand at the moment?
Look, it's unfairly tough. It's quite sad. I've seen an industry that used to attract Northern Hemisphere horses to our million-dollar races well before Australian had them. Horses like Highland Chieftain for John Dunlop, and another horse came down at a similar era that I can't recall. And we were able to attract them because of our racing before Australia could. That was how well we were going then. It's fair to say we've gone backwards and Australia's gone skyward in that time. Very sad.
How can it change? Can you see light at the end of the tunnel?
Look, you never say never. I'm certain there are so many good people in the industry that racing will always survive. But it's fair to say it's been mismanaged over a long period of time, and we probably haven't had a government that's recognised it or supported it, and now it's got to a stage where it's a minnow industry rather than a vibrant industry. It's harder to get that support and recognition. So I suppose when things bottom out, they only have one way to go, and I think it's very much a case of that at present. We have bottomed out, and there are a lot of very good brains working on recharging the industry. It will happen. It won't happen overnight, but to the positive side of it, in my time in the industry, I have never seen so many well-educated, vibrant young people willing to get behind the industry. There's a new group just been formed called Four Racing, capital F-O-R Racing, and of which my training partner Robert is an integral part, and we've got some great people on that, and just getting things moving again, and they're getting a little bit of power behind them and a little bit of recognition, and the Rita board that has been put in place to steer it in a better direction is made up of some very good people as well. So I do think that we've been years going down the gurgler, but we've sort of got to the bottom, and there's only one way to go when you get that deep.
So prize money levels over there, is it sustainable for owners to have a horse in work and make it not a profit, but just to try and break even?
I think we're very fortunate in New Zealand that it is still recognised as a hobby, pastime, sport, whatever you might like to call it. And there wouldn't be too many owners that go into it looking at the sustainability of it. Whether that's, I think it's they've been conditioned over the last 20 years because, it has not been sustainable. So they are conditioned to it. They enjoy the sport, and that's why they're in it. Undoubtedly, there are owners that have dropped out over the years because of the costs of it, because they keep rising. Look, as I said, racing will always survive, and it's fair to say the people that are left in racing are very good people, and for that reason, it will survive.
How do you view which has been debated quite a lot recently here in Victoria and Melbourne, the Melbourne Cup landscape with the internationals, the invasion of the internationals that are plundering our great race, the Melbourne Cup, and the lack of local stayers that we have? That have been developing over the last few years. We're calling Surprise Baby ours, by the way, the Kiwi bred Surprise Baby, the Aussie hope this year. How do you see the Australian breeding landscape? And to an extension of that, New Zealand, who was so long the home of those stayers that would come across for the Melbourne Cup?
Look, I don't think that you can blame the invasion of the overseas horses for the lack of your numbers in the big race, the big staying races. It's fair to say you probably haven't concentrated on breeding those horses. Europe has been doing it for hundreds of years. New Zealand, yes, they were lucky enough to have your good staying sires, and they were renowned for it, and I think they always will be. Not only do we like breeding that sort of horse? It's in our DNA to breed that sort of horse, because we know to breed sprinters, we can never take you guys on. I think also the New Zealand owner / trainer go into the industry with a little bit more patience, and that is very much a requirement of developing a stayer. So I think they're all pieces of the jigsaw, and Australia, with such impeccable breeding lines as they have these days, they'll come up with their class stayers again. But they're so very good at breeding your short distance horses that I suppose that's taken precedent over the years.
Being a neutral observer from New Zealand, what do you make of all of the talk about the state v state border war, Sydney, Melbourne, the encroachment on the Spring Carnival by Sydney with the Everest on Caulfield Cup Day, the Golden Eagle on Derby Day, the huge prize money in these new races?
Look, I don't want a one-way ticket out of this place. look, I've read and heard a lot about it. My take on it is history and tradition are there for a reason. Tradition's there because what it represents has been successful. I'm not a person to shy away from change at all. I still think I've got a very open mind and reasonably progressive, but To implement change, I think you've got to be certain of the moves you make. And, ask yourself the question. It's a little bit of a quirky type innovation, the Everest. Are we going to be able to look back in 150 years' time and say what an amazing innovation this was by our forebears? I don't know, and certainly you can do that about the Melbourne Cup and the Melbourne Carnival. So that would be my take on it. I don't know. I'm sitting on neutral ground. But, if you're going to implement such change, you've got to be certain that it's going to be going to work, and not going to work just for this year, next year, or 5 years' time, but for a long time, because what will unsettle an industry is constant change because something hasn't quite worked, so you have to tinker again.
A lot of talk about the disruption to the pattern committee and the flow of feature races. Do you think we've got too many feature races, too many group ones? Are we oversaturated here in Australia in that area?
I don't know whether I'm the right person to comment on that. Certainly, I think any group race win has to be earned, and you've got to be able to look back and think, well, the horses that surrounded that winner were also group horses. You don't want to cheapen a breeding industry by having an oversaturation of group races, but it's never occurred to me that you have that.
Mm. You say you're open-minded and change, not afraid of change. There's a lot of groundswell at the moment about animal welfare and the perception of racing. I'm not sure what it's like in New Zealand, but there's been a lot of talk about the whips here in Australia, also over in the UK as well. Where do you sit with the perception of whips in racing and the general, I suppose, view that racing is held by the general public?
Look, I love the animal, and you know, they have been my life. I left a career in banking to pursue a career in racing, and it's been very good to me. I said prior that I was a hands-on person, and that indicates that horses come first. I think there will be whips in racing for the foreseeable future, but you know what I have seen over my time in racing is that the whips are incredibly well padded now. They're wands rather than whips, I think, and they're there for guidance and assistance rather than punishment, in my view. Put that together with the education that your jockeys and riders have had over the last 20-year period. You know, we used to see some punishing riders, and you know, we don't want to see that again. You know, I think we've got some absolute stylist riders, and in fact, I'd say the majority of our riders in both countries, and more so probably here, are stylists and perfectionists, and the use of the whip is becoming less and less. But I think it is a great tool for guidance, and I don't really think it's a punishment as a lot of non-racing people might see it.
I want to ask you a couple of quick ones about your Kiwi cohorts before we drill down on Rondinella and the last today. Tiakau Shark, how good do you think he is? Does he deserve a run in the Cox Plate?
Look, I had a look at you know, the horses that are on the borderline for the Cox Plate, and you can make a case for a fair number of them, and I suppose there it comes down to group racing again, and I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, I haven't really researched him, but I think a group three in the South Island was his best group win, but then he stepped out in Australian soil ran second in one of your great group ones. So look, it's the handicapper that really is far more knowledgeable on that selection than what I am, but you can see why he's in a mix with a number of others wanting those last slots.
All right, well, last question. The chosen one. Do you think he's a genuine Caulfield Cup contender on Saturday?
Look, he stays a mile and a half, and that's a big plus. I think he's in at probably a reasonable weight that makes it winnable. But, you know, it's a good field, and you'd have to put him in the mix with the top five or six, I would think.
Well, you got your very nice mare, Rondinella, going around in the last race today. I know a lot of punters will be counting on her in the last race today. Gee, she didn't get much luck at the Valley last start, did she?
No. Nash was of the opinion that had he got clear five or six strides earlier, he could possibly have won the race. But, look, I was happy with the run. It was a first run around Mooney Valley, a first run at night racing, and I thought she conducted herself well. You know, the conditions of the race suited today, and probably my only question mark going into it is that I'm trying to get another mile out of it because further is definitely her forte.
I was going to say, what's her best distance?
I believe 2,000 metres. A fast run 2,000 metres, I think, is ideal for her.
Is the matriarch her aim?
the Matriarch or even the Emirates.
The Emirates,
same day. Yeah.
Well, we know she's got the class. Barrier 6 today, taking into consideration the mile. Do you think she should just about win?
Look, I'm very happy with her. I see she's equal favourite. I think she deserves to be. I'd be very disappointed if she lets us down, and certainly it wouldn't surprise me to see her win, but we've all been in racing a fair while. There's no certainties.
Roger, we know that only too well, but we'll be cheering on Rondinella in the last, currently $3 second favourite behind Fidalia at $2.90. Great to see you. Great to see you back here. And hopefully we'll see you in the winter stall a little later this afternoon at Caulfield.
Thank you very much.